Hey, it's Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst and certified financial planner. You may have heard me dispensing financial advice on the radio before, but did you know you can get my money tips on demand with my podcast, Money Watch with Jill Schlesinger? If you have a question about a major financial decision in your life, this is the show for you. Follow and listen to Money Watch with Jill Schlesinger on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
What these guys are doing is like the Charles Manson of politics and manipulation of intelligence and conspiracy. People have died. People have lost their livelihoods. Yeah. People have lost their careers. People have not been promoted. Families have been destroyed. Finances have been wiped out. Millions of Americans were kicked off of social media. News networks like Real America's Voice were not allowed onto the legacy media platforms. This damage is far and wide and has been ongoing for a long time. So Nixon is not even a drop in the bucket to what this kind of two or three dozen criminals in and around the Clinton operation, the DNC, and Obama's operation, and Biden's operation for that matter, have been doing now for over a decade.
Devin Nunes, an intelligence advisor to President Trump, speaking about the consequences. This can't be all these scandals. Our YouTube poll for today is, which scandal are you most interested in getting the full story? Russiagate, Epstein, the auto pen situation with President Biden, or COVID as a whole. This isn't. It's easy to think of this as a political battle. It's just a jockeying for power. You know, all is fair in love and war, and politics is war. It's easy to think that, like, oh, well, the Democrats did what they thought they had to do to win, or that the consequences, that the ultimate consequence here, the worst thing that could happen is that Hillary Clinton lost the election in 2016. She put all of her eggs in a basket of deplorables and lost by contriving a lie against Donald Trump, thinking that that would be the nail in the coffin to keep him from getting to the Oval Office. What did Hillary Clinton run on in 2016?
She couldn't define that herself. They asked her one time to define the difference between a socialist and a capitalist.
Democrat.
A Democrat, that's right.
A Democrat and a Democratic socialist.
She couldn't figure it out. She kind of stumbled through it like J.B. Pritzker talking about gerrymandering.
I would say that it's not that she couldn't figure it out. It's that she didn't want to divide those people. She needed both of them. She needed the socialists.
Yeah.
You and I are smart enough to understand that that is a policy.
That is an
ideology that leans into every policy. But Devin Nunes is here, and he's talking about the type of damage that was done. I mean, he says it, and I believe him. People have lost their lives over their lives and their livelihood. Certainly, many people. And it's impossible to look at this type of a situation. I mean, a lot of the people on the left will really work hard to encourage you to do so. But to look at it like it is just, you know, this is a political thing. This is something that happened in the past. Go back and look at what they actually prosecuted Donald Trump on. That was in the past, but that didn't matter then. It didn't even matter. Like I've said before, I challenged Donald Trump to try to replicate the crime that he was convicted of. I don't think he would even know how to do it. Here's more from Tulsi Gabbard.
There's a report tonight from the Federalist that the DOJ is actually asking you for more documents in its grand jury probe. Is that true? And what are they asking for now?
That is true, Laura, and I just want to point out how important this is, that Attorney General Pam Bondi, through the Department of Justice, is taking this necessary first step toward accountability, which is essential for the American people to begin to have any kind of trust in the integrity of our democratic republic. I met with the Department of Justice prosecutors today, and yes, they are committed to leaving no stone unturned as they conduct this grand jury investigation and find the truth. Obviously, we've already handed over the documents that we've declassified and released publicly over the last few weeks. They have more questions, and they're going to be really taking a deep dive into this again, looking everywhere to find the truth and conduct this very serious investigation.
The director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, there talking about how deep they're willing to go on the issue of getting to the bottom of the Russia hoax, but also many other situations that we're facing right now. The Russia one being of great interest because the names that are being named are the biggest names that you could have in an investigation like this. Should they be untouchable in any way, shape, or form? Let's ask Roy Murdoch once again with us, nationally syndicated columnist, Project 21 ambassador as well, and a Fox News contributor. Roy, welcome back to the show. Always a pleasure to have you here.
Yeah, it's great to be with you.
Are you surprised at all with Tulsi Gabbard, with Kash Patel, Dan Bongino, among other names, people who have been behind the scenes working to uncover the truth of what actually happened, that the biggest names that could be named have been named in regards to this Russia collusion story?
I'm not sure whether or not I'm surprised. I'm certainly pleased that things are going along these lines and that they're not doing what so many Republicans have done in the past, which is, oh, just turn the other cheek, move on, let's be nice to them, they'll be nice to us, et cetera, et cetera. This is egregious, horrific behavior on the part of Hillary Clinton, Obama, FBI, former director James Comey, former CIA directors John Brennan and James Clapper and others. And remember, this isn't just initial investigation into some credible charges or at least credible accusations. There was some tie between Donald J. Trump and the Kremlin, and maybe the investigation took on a life of its own and got out of control. This thing was invented, fabricated, made up, synthesized from the very, very beginning. This thing was fake from the very start. This didn't have, you know, legitimate roots that then just got kind of out of control. And this wasn't just like, okay, let's just put out a little, you know, nasty Twitter message and, you know, kind of tweak Trump and move on with our lives. This thing dragged on for 3 years and consumed the national attention. Half the country thought that, oh my God, the President of the United States is a KGB agent. What a terrible monster he is. And the other half of the country sitting there looking at the other half thinking, how could you possibly be so consumed with Trump derangement syndrome that you believe that the President of the United States is taking orders from Putin. This is a serious, serious, nasty stuff. This is a severe abuse of power. This is conspiracy. And people were damaged very badly in the process. You had people like George Papadopoulos get thrown behind bars who did nothing wrong. You had Paul Manafort and one of his aides get imprisoned, again, did nothing wrong. You had Michael Flynn, former national security advisor, and Roger Stone, longtime political strategist for Trump and other Republicans, sentenced to jail, sentenced to prison. Fortunately, they were pardoned by Trump right before he left office, so they didn't have to show up in prison. But people had lost their liberty, got thrown behind bars. People were bankrupted with massive, massive legal fees in the six and seven digits. And this is not because they were fighting any legitimate charges or any actual crime. This was all totally invented as fake as Bugs Bunny or Roadrunner or Daffy Duck.
Yeah.
And the people behind this, I hate the term hold them to account. I have no idea what that means. I want consequences and I want punishment. Consequences like losing their law licenses, being disbarred, paying massive fines, and then punishment like being thrown behind bars for 10, 5, 7, 10, 20 years or longer. These people have to pay very, very serious punishment and consequences for the tremendous evil that they wrought upon these individuals I mentioned and the entire United States of America. Shame on them. They really can't suffer enough, in my opinion.
Roy Murdoch with us right now, and you can read his piece on this in the Daily Signal. It's time for Russia hoax conspirators to face the music. I encourage you to read that. So, Roy, when you compare how the Trump Justice Department and investigative entities are looking into what actually happened and uncovered it. There's a method to their madness. There's the way that they're, it seems a lot of people like me can sit there and be like, give us everything. We want to see everything. It seems as though they're being very, very intentional and cautious in how they are releasing things. Can you compare how the Trump administration is approaching these investigations into the political witch hunts that were perpetuated by prior administrations, both Obama's Hillary Clinton's hopeful one, and then, of course, Joe Biden's. Compare the way Donald Trump is approaching this versus the way Joe Biden's Justice Department pursued Donald Trump.
Well, among other things, we are seeing in this particular Russia hoax case, we're just finding out over the last few days, that apparently the Department of Justice is presenting this evidence to a grand jury and letting the grand jury determine if there is sufficient evidence to indict these people for their tremendous crimes against the country, versus what Biden and these other people did, which was in large cases to go into court, concoct bizarre legal theories as to whether, for example, it is against the law to have somebody to pay somebody to sign a non-disclosure agreement. I've signed non-disclosure agreements in exchange for money, in exchange for various activities, contracts, business activities in which I'm involved. People sign non-disclosure agreements thousands and thousands every single day. There's nothing illegal about that. And yet you had Donald J. Trump being chased through a courtroom here in New York City because supposedly there was a Stormy Daniels signed a non-disclosure agreement, and somehow that was conspiratorial or evil or criminal. No, there's nothing criminal about that at all. So a lot of these things were crimes, alleged crimes, where there was no crime, and yet the Department of Justice, state prosecutors, local prosecutors, were going after Trump, engaged in this tremendous lawfare strategy designed essentially to get him off the campaign trail and behind bars, and it backfired. The more they tried to pursue this sort of thing, and claim, for example, that he defrauded Deutsche Bank by claiming that his properties were worth more money than they actually were worth. Deutsche Bank said, look, we weren't defrauded. We got our money back. We got paid with interest. We got paid ahead of schedule. We went back to Trump and said, look, you're a great customer. We'd love to lend you more money. And yet you had this judge here in New York City saying, oh, my God, he defrauded these people, even though they're running back saying, please, let's do more business with you. And by the way, he overstated the value of Mar-a-Lago, which I forget the exact number, but I believe the judge in that case said Mar-a-Lago is worth something like $20 or $30 million. That's probably a $1 billion property. They're empty, totally empty lots selling within a few miles of Mar-a-Lago for like $200 million with just dirt. No fountains, no landscaping, no swimming pools, no bedrooms, no ballrooms, and that's worth $200 million. And according to this ridiculous judge up here in New York, Mar-a-Lago, with this, one of the most palatial homes in America, with all the landscaping and beautiful decorations and stuff you want, that's only worth $20 million or $25 million. But this dirt lot is worth 10x that amount of money. And therefore, that defrauded Deutsche Bank, even though Deutsche Bank said, well, we were not defrauded. We do due diligence. If we think there are any funny numbers, we are aware of that because we're big boys at Deutsche Bank, boys and girls. And We were paid back with interest ahead of schedule and went back to Trump and said, hey, let's do more business together. So this is the kind of way that Trump has been treated. I think Tulsi Gabbard and Attorney General Pam Bondi are being much more serious, presenting evidence before a grand jury. And if the grand jury agrees, then these people, I suppose, will be indicted, but only if the grand jury believes there is sufficient evidence to do so.
We're speaking with Dory Murdoch. One last question. This Russia hoax scenario, is there any way that the Russia collusion narrative that has plagued Donald Trump from the moment that was launched to this very day, he has had to combat against that. Is there any possibility that story is fabricated, created, and dispersed the way it is without Barack Obama's approval and participation?
That's a very good question. A key to all of this is that December of 2016, the FBI said essentially that no, we don't believe that there is any involvement on the part of Russia. They may have tried to hack the election, but they didn't succeed in doing so. Obama basically said, look, that's not the answer we want. We want you guys to go back and think about it some more and come up with a different answer. And sure enough, January 6, 2017, CIA actually came forward and said, quote, we assess Putin and the Russian government aspire to help President-elect Trump's election chances when possible by discrediting Secretary Clinton and publicly contrasting her unfavorably to him, unquote. So the CIA changed their tune, and once they did that, then they were able to go forward and say, okay, I guess this means he really is a Russian agent, so let's start, you know, crank up the Russia hoax, get the investigations going, and get the congressional committees going, and so on and so on. And this dragged on for 3 years. and pitted Americans against each other, threw people behind bars who shouldn't have been, and then completely drowned people in legal bills who should have been left alone. This is serious, egregious abuse of power, and those perpetrators who engage in these massive crimes against, I think they're frankly atrocities against these individuals and crimes against the entire United States of America, need to pay serious serious price for all this in terms of fines, loss of their legal licenses, disbarment, and imprisonment. Can't happen soon enough to a more delightful group of people, in my view.
Well, keep the pressure on, Joy. We love reading your work in the Daily Signal and all the different places that you're syndicated. And we thank you for your time today here on The Annie Fry Show.
Great, Annie. Great to talk to you. Thanks very much.
Great to talk to you as well. Deroy Murdoch, nationally syndicated columnist, Project 21 ambassador, Fox News contributor, and friend of The Annie Fry Show. We're going to take a quick break. That YouTube live chat poll, which scandal are you most interested in getting the full story? I'm going to read some of your comments as soon as we come back. You want the full story the most. I know you want them all. The most on Russiagate, Epstein, AutoPen, or COVID. Let us know what you think. We'll be right back.
I'm gonna turn off my- Hey, it's Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst and certified financial planner. You may have heard me dispensing financial advice on the radio before, but did you know you can get my money tips on demand with my podcast, Money Watch with Jill Schlesinger? If you have a question about a major financial decision in your life, this is the show for you. Follow and listen to Money Watch with Jill Schlesinger on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So the YouTube poll today, which scandal are you most interested in getting the full story? Russia, Gate, Epstein, AutoPen, or COVID? Ryan, you got to pick one. We know everybody wants all of it, but you got to pick one.
Man, I'm really, really close between Epstein and AutoPen. AutoPen, I think since the last time we did this poll, that's a newer scandal because...
AutoPen?
Yeah, we've done this poll before with other choices, and AutoPen I don't think was one of them. But you're right, that does kind of encompass everything about the Biden administration. The fact that this guy was not doing anything, clearly didn't know what he was signing, according to accounts from even the Speaker of the House. So that one is very intriguing, but I still am going to go Epstein because I think there still is a lot to uncover there. The exciting thing about that is because it's gotten so much attention, I believe this is back on the radar for President Trump. I believe it's back on the radar as a priority for the DOJ and the House. And now you have Democrats on board saying that they want to know the truth because they were never saying it before. So now you have all these people being subpoenaed to come in and testify on this subject. I'm really excited about that to find out what really went down and how it was covered up. Is a big part of this too.
So Joe says, I want AutoPen. This is on YouTube. Leave us your comments there. We'll be featuring them throughout the show because I believe the rats leaving that ship will more readily snitch to save themselves, which in turn will lead to obsmists. What's that?
Obsmists?
Yeah. Which will take us to Chappaqua. Okay. So I think that the interesting thing about the AutoPen scandal. The AutoPen is a one-word summation of an absent president. The reason why people are shortening it to AutoPen is because there is a mechanism in place for the presidency that allows them to put the president's signature on things that he doesn't physically put that pen to that paper. Now, President Trump has said the White House gets, I don't know, hundreds or thousands of letters, lots of letters. And oftentimes they will send back replies to letters that they have gotten and the president's signature will be on there. That is different than signing an executive order. That is really different than signing a pardon. The president is not enacting some sort of official act by replying to a letter of a kid who maybe lost a parent in military service or something like that. Or somebody who benefited from or is asking for attention to a certain type of matter that maybe the president would be able to have some sort of effect on. Being able to reply to those letters, those type of things, don't require the president's physical presence in order to author those things. The only way that you get to the place where the president of the United States is blanket pardoning his son. Which is, isn't that the only one that he signed himself? I think he signed Hunter Biden's pardon. Why did he sign that one and not the rest of them?
That's a very good question.
The fact that I almost feel like it would be better for their case if they would have used the same signature for Hunter's.
That's very true.
Like, if none of the other ones stick because the president wasn't there and didn't approve it, but the Hunter one does stick, why would a father do that? Did he have the presence of mind in that instance? Was that something that he could understand when the rest of the stuff he wasn't either briefed on or a part of the decision? Can he delegate pardons to his staff? I think the answer is no. It's an executive authority. The only way that that concept could ever even reach the level of power that Joe Biden did is if leading up to the 2020 election, so many things were in disarray, so many lines were blurred, and there had to be an enormous amount of confidence in a bureaucracy that would sustain the country in the process that we just had to get somebody in there. And I actually think that Joe Biden's limited cognitive ability was the plausible deniability that you needed to get across the finish line, because they just needed 4 years. That's what they needed. He said before he got elected the first time that he wasn't going to run again. That was his commitment. The only way that all of this stuff can come together is if you're so braggadociously arrogant about what you can get away with that you could even make Joe Biden the president of the United States. You could make him be the president of the United States. Just a little advocacy potentially for AutoPen. I don't know that that's the one I'm voting for in this one. They're all huge. We need your votes. When we come back, Joe Concha is going to join us, and I'm going to talk to him about the fall of Stephen Colbert and what this might mean for the future. Plus, Greg Gutfeld on Thursday going to be on Jimmy Fallon's show. That's pretty huge. Joe Concha, our dear friend, next on The Annie Fry Show.
Hey, it's Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst and certified financial planner. You may have heard me dispensing financial advice on the radio before, but did you know you can get my money tips on demand with my podcast, Money Watch with Jill Schlesinger? If you have a question about a major financial decision in your life, this is the show for you. Follow and listen to Money Watch with Jill Schlesinger on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Governor, I don't want to, spoil anyone's reputation here. You're a billionaire, okay? Not a very popular thing to be right now.
I'm okay with it.
You're okay with it, I'm sure. You know what? That shows real courage. But
I've got to stand up for my people, you know.
I think it's
Joe Concha, Fox News contributor.
I got to stand up for my people. You've got the billionaire governor of my home state of Illinois saying I got to stand up for my people jokingly on a failed Stephen Colbert show. And everybody just laughs. Joe Concha, welcome back to the show. Fox News contributor, author of The Greatest Comeback Ever Inside Trump's Big Beautiful Campaign, which you can get now. Welcome back. Good to have you.
And I said, "What's Fred Flintstone doing on? What's Fred Flintstone doing on Colbert?"
It's,
does it make any sense to you?
I mean, it makes no sense in all the sense in the world at the same time. Kind of.
Yeah.
Were you able to watch that whole interview? How do you consume this?
I did.
Do you sit down and watch Colbert, or do you just do the clip thing like I do?
No, I can't. Look, I'm not, 31 like you are. Okay, I got to go to bed. I got young kids. Sorry, I got a lot to do. I got 8 jobs. But, I watch the clips, and it's just, it's a Democratic late-night therapy session. I mean, that's all it is. And Colbert, just over and over again, I don't get why CBS just doesn't cut bait already with this guy and just say, you know what, if you're just going to have the same people on to complain about Republicans and talk about saving democracy when you're losing by a million viewers to Greg Gutfeld, who has 1/100th the resources that you do, I just don't get why they want to lose money and keep this guy in the air while he's bashing the network, by the way, when he isn't, kissing the butts of Democrats. I don't know. I mean, if I ran that network, he'd be gone yesterday.
Let me ask you to dig in a little bit on this, because certainly in conservative talk radio, like the understanding of having all the right people, but no extra people or resources. You know, there are people who are scrapping and working really hard pretty much around the clock to try to make at least what we do here on this show happen. But Fox News, I've heard them say on the Gutfeld show many times that when you look at what Colbert has at his fingertips to produce a show that is not a winner, what's the difference there? And how have they gotten away with it for this long?
That's the thing. Like, I hear anywhere from like 100 to 200 staffers as far as like what Colbert has.
What are they doing?
Now, think about what are they doing? Exactly. I have to know, Annie, what we're doing right now, okay, is having a conversation. And it's you asking questions, me giving analysis. We go back and forth for a bit. Do we need even more than like one or two people to oversee this process that we're going through right now?
Not really.
Historically? No, we don't. And that's the whole thing. So again, Colbert, 95% of that show is Colbert asking, you know, generous questions to Democrats, and then they answer them. So why do I need 200 people, 100 people, $130 million in production budget again? Where is that going? It's just, it's typical of Democrats, actually. This totally makes sense now, because they just throw money at things, think it's going to produce things, and it doesn't. And that's why Gutfeld, I could tell you, Greg's, he's on the 21st floor of Fox News, the headquarters in New York. And when you walk by their staff, it's 8 people. It's literally like 4 desks, like back to back with each other, and that's it. And yet he's getting 3.5 million viewers when Colbert is getting, let's put it this way. Kamala Harris was on that show last week. Big news, right? She hasn't done an interview in quite some time. You'd think it's big news. And she only got 2.3 million people watching that, you know, with her book and the tour and everything else like that. So even when he gets the so-called big guests, they're not big guests. Tom Hanks used to be a big guest, or Rickles used to be a big guest, or Sinatra, or Burt Reynolds, you know, on Carson. Now, who's the big guest? It's Bernie Sanders, right?
Yeah.
It's Cory Booker. And that's Colbert. He's the inmate running the asylum, and clearly the inmate has no idea what he's doing from a business perspective.
What do they get an audience? They're in New York, right? Colbert's in New York, isn't it?
Yeah.
So
at Sullivan's theory, yeah.
Okay.
Street.
So the old Letterman setup.
Correct.
Do they get an audience that just walk, you know, get up in line in New York City? Oh, we're gonna go take in the Colbert show. You get in line, you get in, you get to watch a taping. Is that how that still works?
Let's put it this way. If this was in St. Louis, Missouri, this show, no one would show up.
Right.
Right? Or Missouri in general. New York, liberal, the tickets are free. So if it's free, you could go watch this show. It's mostly tourists that show up there. They're in New York. They're like, well, you see Colbert, it's free. Yeah, sure. If it's free, why not go see it?
I can't imagine going to New York City and spending my time in New York City to go see like the Colbert show. And I go and it's Bernie Sanders. Like, how disappointing. I guess you get what you get knowing that. But like Jimmy Fallon now. Thursday, Greg Gutfeld is going to go be on that show. What do you think about Jimmy Fallon being willing to say, come on the show? Well, we'd love to have you.
I think Jimmy Fallon's been very resentful ever since he messed up Trump's hair in 2016. Remember when Trump was running? Trump goes on there. He asks, is it real? Trump says, you could shake it. And he does. And it was a viral moment. Obviously, good for Trump. And any other time, you would say, all right, well, that was just a late night thing that we just saw. And it was funny. And Fallon was eviscerated. He was ostracized. He was seen as, how dare you humanize this Nazi, this Hitler wannabe. And he went from first to third in a hurry, because then the late night talk shows became political. Now in Trump 2.0, since he was elected in 2024, this stuff ain't working anymore. So I think Fallon's resigned to that fact. Fallon, of the three, Kimmel, Colbert, Fallon, is easily the most talented in terms of being an entertainer, to do musical bits, to do imitations, just in general being funny. By far, he's the funniest. Kimmel's like the Pope of late night, who just lectures on stuff, and Colbert is just insufferable. Fallon, you kind of root for, because he's from the old guard, and hopefully he could go back to doing the show that he wanted to originally when he was number one in late night, until Trump came along and Colbert hijacked the entire industry.
Yeah, you know, and I think from our side of the aisle, as a conservative-minded person, a Republican, whatever people want to call it, I think we would laugh the hardest at a really good Trump joke. Like Donald Trump would laugh. Didn't Donald Trump give Bill Maher like a list of the insults or something, and he signed it. Bill Maher loved it. I mean, like, the uptightness, it seems as though the people, the Kimmels and the Colberts of the world, are looking for collective approval, where Jimmy Fallon looks to me like there's pretty much nothing that he wouldn't do if he thought he could make people laugh by doing it.
Precisely. When I met Trump at Mar-a-Lago on New Year's Eve, he invited my wife and me down. It's funny because my wife ran track at Georgetown. She was Division I, ranked third in the country at one point. I'm not doing this to be braggadocious, but I shared all this with him during. Yeah, I know. Like, what? I know the next question. What's she doing married to you? I know. I hear it 1,000 times.
Hadn't occurred to me, Joe.
You're funny. But the point is that he remembered me sharing this with him because we're talking about men playing against women in sports. Sure. I wasn't just talking about my wife. And when we meet him, you know, we sat at his table. He first like goes to her, like basically ignores me. He goes, "Is this the runner? Is this the one that could blow me away?" He goes, "I eat McDonald's every day. Trust me, I'm not running against you." You know, if I have a golf cart, maybe I could win. Like, the guy is self-deprecating.
Yeah.
And yeah, sure. So he doesn't mind humor if it's done in the Dana Carvey way, the way it was done with George H.W. Bush or Daryl Hammond with Bill Clinton. Right. That was, he laughed. It was funny. And I'm sure Clinton and Bush found it funny. And now it's just nasty, like Alec Baldwin when he did Trump, and obviously everything with Colbert, you know, making homophobic jokes about Trump and Putin. It's not funny anymore. It's just nasty. And that's why these guys, thankfully, are going away, Annie.
Does Greg Gutfeld have anything to lose by going on Jimmy Fallon? I mean, you know him certainly better than we do here. Do you have a look behind the curtain as to how he is going to handle this is like, I'm leaning into this. I can't wait to see what happens because I don't know what it's going to look like.
No, I think Greg's he's a genuinely funny guy, and I think it's going to be a funny conversation for the most part. I don't think Fallon's going to ambush him. I don't think he's capable of it, quite frankly. But I think in the end, what it shows is that Fallon knows that, look, this is a number one guy in late night, getting a far bigger audience than me, double the size of Fallon. So why not have him on? It's going to be, obviously, we're talking about it. It's going to create a couple of news cycles. And I think in the end, this shows that Greg Gutfeld, who came from 3 a.m., Red Eye. I used to do that show. You know, and it would beat CNN and MSNBC, most shows, 3 a.m. With no staff to be where he is now and sitting on the late show or Johnny Carson used to occupy. I think that's just awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be something for people to take in. And I just want to see how these two professional gentlemen handle themselves because they are competitors. I mean, certainly Greg Gutfeld has made jokes about late night shows and how pathetic that the current status is. And it seems as though Jimmy Fallon's always had at least a willingness to make everybody laugh. And he seems to be genuinely invested in things that make people happy, which is the other side is the misery loves company. Is Jimmy Kimmel going to last very much longer?
No, I don't think. Look, Disney is a different breed because they have a lot more money behind them. So maybe he does. But I mean, again, Kimmel, when he said a couple of years ago, "I hope that no Trump supporter ever watches me again," you're basically like telling the business side, "Screw you, I'm telling half the audience never to tune in again." And sure enough, they didn't, right? So that went way down. And then you talked about another Jimmy, and Jimmy Acosta, I was hoping we could talk about this, interviewing a kid who was murdered at Parkland. I have a high school friend whose daughter was there. She had to hide in a closet. And it's just amazing. This guy puts on the AI version of a dead kid to talk about gun control. That was the sickest thing I have ever seen in so-called journalism. Not that Jim Acosta is a journalist, but I mean, I'm glad that he's being just roasted into oblivion, and I hope no one takes this person seriously again.
Yeah, certainly. It does seem like in Trump's first 6.5 months of being back in office, there's a lot of comeuppance happening, and just sitting there and watching it get dished out is very enjoyable to sit there and take
Sidney Sweeney, right? Same thing. Culture shift. This stuff, no one likes this crap anymore, and no one's putting up with it. And quite frankly, the left is losing the argument day after day after day, Annie.
Well, people can remember how we got to here by reading your book, The Greatest Comeback Ever. It is an absolute must-read. You can read Kamala's book, but then you can have The Chaser be The Greatest Comeback Ever. It might feel even better. I've read it, and it's wonderful. Joe, thank you. We appreciate you.
Annie, you're the best. Take care.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Joe Concha is a Fox News contributor on X at Joe Concha TV. He's a great writer, and his book, The Greatest Comeback Ever, is all about the lead-up, the campaign, everything that happened in Trump's run to win his second term. And you lived it. You were there. you ebbed and flowed, emotionally yanked and pulled in every direction as this was happening. When you listen, like, it's all boiled down to this one book. And when you're listening to it, if this were a fiction story that was written, you wouldn't believe that this could possibly be true. But we lived it. It is real. And it is the greatest comeback ever. Really, a great gift if you're looking to give a gift for somebody who really enjoys the fact that Donald Trump won. But read it for yourself. Or get the audiobook, which is what I did. And Joe will read it to you. Let's take a quick break. Ryan's going to get back in here. A couple more comments here on the Annie Fry YouTube live chat poll about the poll question we're asking. Which scandal are you most interested in getting the full story? We got a lot of thoughts here. A lot of people on the comments here saying AutoPen, but Robert said, I voted Russiagate, wanted AutoPen. So it kind of seems like it's shaken out between there, but I did peek at the results and it's closer than I thought it would be. Let us know what you think. We'll be right back.
I'll walk with you, my dear.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. You know, I was, I came across a story maybe a week or two ago. Apparently, Scott Bessent has a husband and kids. And I think I sent that to you guys. Did you guys know that Scott Bessent was gay?
I did not, and I've never seen that.
The guy who is implementing Donald Trump's economic policies, he's the Treasury Secretary, right? That's pretty high up in the cabinet. Isn't it amazing? I mean, I don't know how many of you listening right now knew that already. But here's the difference, folks. Scott Bessent is masterful at his job. And he's been masterful in his position as the Secretary of the Treasury. And apparently, it never rose to the occasion where Donald Trump wanted to be like, hey, everybody, guess what about Scott Bessent? That didn't matter. Scott Bessent has just been present and kicking butt and taking names at implementing Donald Trump's strategy, specifically from tariffs, from negotiations with other countries. And he also happens to have this specific kind of demographic attached to his person. Isn't this the way it's supposed to be done? Like, I'm not making it a thing because I want people to know about this. This is how it should be. Scott Bessent's a man. He's living his life in America, and he's really good at what he does, and he got rewarded for that with a really amazing position. Think back to the Joe Biden era. That was all you knew about people. They would get appointed, and then you'd have somebody who was a member of the LGBTQ community or a different race than white or a female or whatever it might be. They would appoint that person. They would tell you their, you know, check the box demographic category that they fulfilled for that cabinet. And then they all run around and just sequentially pat each other on the back. A big circle bat pack. Back pat.
Yep, that's what you'd call it.
Yes. And then they just move on to the next one. Here we are 6.5 months into this. And, you know, it's the story is that they never made it a story. Doesn't that say something about Donald Trump? Like, yeah. How can you be fearful of your existence in Donald Trump's America as a gay person? When Donald Trump's Treasury Secretary is a gay person. He's obviously not afraid to be here. All of this manufactured fear and outrage, like look at the most vocal opposition to Donald Trump. It's all completely and totally emotion based. And I would say 90% of it is completely bonkers untrue.
So you might not know this, but the media in this country is not real friendly to Donald Trump. And when you have the message bearers of the country willing to just bear any message you want, I mean, that's what the Democrats have had for a long time. That's changing now. But the legacy media, as we call it, they have really just done whatever Democrats want. I mean, they are a propaganda arm for that party. And it's amazing to see that when the shoe is on the other foot now, because I think that he is the highest. Again, it's hard to find information on this because it's not a story. It's not. It shouldn't be a story.
It has no bearing on his ability to do his job.
No,
it doesn't. It doesn't. In my mind, it doesn't negate him from being able to do the job. It also doesn't make him any more qualified to do the job. Non-factor. And that is the way. You want to talk about actual equality? This is what actual equality looks like.
Yeah. He is, I think, the highest serving government official ever to be gay. Again, I can't find that information very readily because the media that you're trusting to report on these things just isn't. They don't care because it's Donald Trump. But this is what merit-based hiring looks like. You don't care about their background. You don't care about their race. You care about whether they're able to do a job. And he's doing that job really well.
I can't stress enough how well this makes my point. Scooter, our lovable liberal on the YouTube chat all the time, says Pete Buttigieg, also a gay person, potential presidential candidate in 2 years. Is there any other thing that is qualifying him to be a presidential candidate? Like, I don't have any idea what the fact that Pete Buttigieg being gay has to do with him being a presidential candidate. The whole point is that there's no point. It blew my mind when I found out. Wasn't Scott Bessent in the room when I was in D.C.? Wasn't he the first guy? Like, the first day was Bessent, the second day was Homan.
I don't remember.
It was. In that essence, I've not met him shaking his hand, but it never was an issue. It never was a part of the story. It's not an issue now. But that's, for the Democrats, for Joe Biden, that's like political gold.
Oh, yeah.
It's the number one thing that you should know about Scott Bessent. Forget about the fact that he's super qualified and kicks butt at his job. Did you know who he's married to? And the answer is, I had no idea. And the only reason I care about the story is because this administration shows you what real equality looks like, what actually treating people like human beings and not political poker chips to play, to be like, people like me. Look how good I am. Look what I did for this person. Scott Bessent didn't get there because he's gay. He got there because he's really darn good at what he does. I guess that's the end of the story. 2 o'clock hour, right around the corner. Go vote in the poll. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst and certified financial planner. You may have heard me dispensing financial advice on the radio before, but did you know you can get my money tips on demand with my podcast, Money Watch with Jill Schlesinger? If you have a question about a major financial decision in your life, this is the show for you. Follow and listen to Money Watch with Jill Schlesinger on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.